May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves, demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Greg Barnes, Gregory Hall, and Luke Jacked and Flapped and Coffee-Fied Buxton. This is On The Beat Live. It is Tuesday night. 9:06. I think we have a few viewers in the live stream. If you have any questions or you want us to talk about, certainly send them to us in the chat, tweet us, whatever you need to do to get your questions here. I do want to take a second to send a shout out to a Inside Carolina listener that loves some Inside Carolina and loves Carolina, Mr. Art Close. Art, thinking about you, buddy. We'll do this podcast for you tonight. We'll talk about Carolina football and the spring game and Mac Brown. I'll start with Greg Barnes first. Oh yeah. Rate us, review us, subscribe, follow, however you want to do it on the podcast. They're free to subscribe to, folks. So when I say subscribe, you don't have to send any money in. So subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Get these alerts. Greg, Mac Brown today, I guess pre-spring game press conference. I felt like he was to the point and talked about his expectations, what he wants to see on Saturday, and then the aftermath that they will deal with as a staff and a team after that. I thought he was pretty impressive today.
Yeah, and he's made a point really since he came back that he's going to be forthright and honest, and if that means harsh, then so be it. And I really think because Mac, this is his last stop, he's not looking for another job. This is where he's going to retire. I mean, this is home to his wife, Sally. North Carolina is not going to fire him because he's had so much success here, and he's a Hall of Fame coach, national champion, that he really has the platform to speak up and say a lot of things on a national level and people will listen to it. And it also allows him to be very frank with his coaches and his players. And we have heard, I mean, even last fall, when things were not going the way he wanted them to go, he was pretty hard on his coaches. He's not placating anybody. His goal is to make everybody better. And to do that, you have to be willing to strip down a situation. And really with how the transfer portal is set up, coaching staffs that don't take that approach are going to hurt themselves. And so I think the fact that Mac has been up front with the kids and say, look, you got 5 weeks of spring ball. You have 15 practices. We are in a very strange time. This is unprecedented. We have a transfer portal that's going to open up in July, or it's going to, your date is July 1 to make a decision if you want to play in the fall somewhere else. You've got all these financial implications. So he's been very forthright with them and said, look, this is your time to shine. This is your time to show us what you can provide for this team. And after these 15 practices and after the spring game on Saturday, we're going to evaluate all this film. And we're going to decide, okay, this guy right here didn't play as well as we thought he could. We think he has the potential to be on our two deep. And they'll provide that information. Or this guy, he busted his tail. He did everything right. He's just not good enough to be the type of guy that's going to help us win an ACC championship. And I think by having those hard conversations, it allows the kids to say, okay, well, if I want to play and play serious minutes and serious snaps, I'm going to have to go elsewhere. And it also allows, by doing that, it allows the coaching staff to brace for whatever exodus may occur. Because there's a lot of things that come into this that are going to be strange. One thing that he pointed out, for example, if 5 guys leave, you don't get to bring in 5 guys to replace them. That's not how the initial counter rule works. The transfers out don't eliminate the initial counters, but the transfers in add to it. So there's a juggling act that's going to take place. And so those conversations, I think that says a lot about how Mack Brown is running this program. And it is harsh, but it's honest. And the way that we've always talked to our children, for example, is that we're going to say a lot of things that you're not going to like, but we're doing it for the best of the family. We're doing it for the best of you. And at some point you're going to realize that. And I think everybody's on board with that, and they're willing to have these difficult conversations, and it'll make the program a lot better at the end of the day. But that approach, you see it in all of his conversations with the media. You see it with things that he says. So when he says that a kid like Miles Murphy is having an incredible day at practice, your ears perk up, because he's not blowing smoke. He's not going to offer that just to build up somebody. And if he's critical of somebody or critical of a position, again, you pay attention, because he's not just saying that for no reason. He's being honest and forthright. And so there's a lot of value in that. And yes, Tommy, I thought he was on point today. He wasn't in the mood kind of to joke around. He was straightforward, and get a lot of information that way, a lot of valuable content.
You know, I know I'm going to date myself, and I get that, but Mack Brown 1.0 was the same way, and he sacrificed a average season for two bad ones by cleaning out the closet, and he did that. I knew guys on that team. I knew guys that had played a lot before Mack had gotten there, and he flat out ran them off and got rid of them because he didn't believe that they could help him and help the team accomplish their goals. And ultimately, he was right. He starts with a better floor that Larry Fedora left him, and he's done wonders with it. But you're right, Greg. He's still going to do that here. The only thing that you mentioned, and Luke and Gregory, you guys can chime in here, that is a little concerning for me is, okay, he's going to run – well, he's not running anybody off, but he's going to tell people this is it. If you want to stay, you can stay, but you're not going to play or whatever. But he can't replace them. That, as far as a numbers game, is a little concerning – from the outside looking in, Luke, and you chime in here, you could get yourself in a situation where you're short if Mac's not careful. Is that a fair statement?
Yes and no. If there's one thing I've learned from Mack Brown's press conferences, is the guy loves depth. He loves depth in every position. It's what he's been trying to build up over 3 years. I've also learned that Mack Brown's a pretty smart guy. I have a hard time seeing a situation or he knows if he runs some players off, even if he's honest, he's going to leave himself without certain weapons and you know, in the 2 and 3 spot. I think the guys he's going to tell, maybe now is not your time, or this place is not your place. I think he's pretty confident that this place is not their place. And if he has to put him on the field, he has bigger issues. I think Mack Brown knows the balance between being able to be brutally honest and helping guys out, because that's another thing that Mack Brown is. He really is caring, and as Greg mentioned, whether it doesn't seem like it in the moment, when he tells someone this is not a place, you're not going to get time, I think he means, and I think he's going to try to help them go to a better spot. But I don't think he's ever going to sacrifice that for what he loves and what he thinks builds a program, which is depth.
Absolutely. Gregory, your thoughts on that? We're already getting questions coming in, and we'll get to some of the questions, but I got to get some things off my chest before we get to the questions. Gregory, your thoughts on Mack's presser?
I mean, yeah, Mack's pressers are always pretty substantial. I mean, every one is multi-thousand words, and he loves to talk, and he loves to – sometimes he repeats some things, and when it comes to – I mean, we talk to him every week, which is can be a rarity sometimes in programs. Like, I mean, I don't even know how many times he's gone on a transfer portal rant, which are valid. They're always valid, but he went on another one today. You can kind of – Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic was on there today to ask about the transfer portal. And so I was talking to Chapel Fowler over at Fayetteville Observer, and I was like, incoming rant. And then 6 minutes later, Mack's done talking about the transfer portal. But to Luke's point, he's exactly right. Mack's not going to hurt the program. He's going to do it what he thinks is best for UNC. So I don't think you can kind of leave yourself short. I was thinking about how much Matt cares about recruits, and he's talked about looking forward to 2022 classes, 2023 classes, and even further. And if having these conversations with guys at the end of the spring and the summer, being like, look, this is where, this is how we see you helping us this season. And if guys want to leave right now, it's uncertainty of what's going to happen in the future with bringing recruits in and things like that. So then that potentially could open some spots in your scholarships. I mean, right now, I think Max, one of his largest concerns is whether or not 85 scholarships is not enough. So I think that kind of plays a role as well, as far as moving forward with kind of the super seniors and things like that and recruits and coming, bringing that in. But yeah, and then transitioning to what Mac was talking about with the spring game, I think he was very clear about what he wants to see on Saturday comes the conclusion of spring football. Excuse my, I don't know if you hear my dogs in the background, but they're going crazy. So
can you like get the dog on camera so we can at least see? It looks like a yip yip small dog.
There's two of them and they're chasing each. It's bedtime, so they're literally doing circles right now. And my mom, I don't know if you can hear her, but she's like, she's chasing him because she's trying to get to bed.
So. Yeah, Tommy, over under Gregory's dog being 1 foot. I'm going under.
These are not my dogs. These are my mother's dogs. I've got like, I've got a big hound dog.
Okay.
This big, it's got like you get them groomed and stuff.
She does. They get tomorrow. Actually, they're going to get groomed tomorrow.
Man, is there a daggone blackout version right there so I can just black that corner out of the screen? Go ahead, Luke.
I was going to say, I'm interested to hear everyone's thoughts on the current state. We know Max expressed his opinion, but the current state of the transfer portal. The way I see it, and I'll preface it, and just I'd love to hear your opinions, is we've set up a system where we were in 2021 and we're all about players' rights and we want a great grant player autonomy. But also, it's kind of like free agency, but without, you know, salary caps and owners and player unions. And it seems like the rules within college football, as Mac mentioned, you know, X number of 25 scholarships, 85 roster spots. I don't know the exact numbers. And then also in combination with this rule, especially the one-time transfer rule that gets passed, where people can now go with any place if they're not happy. It seems like the two systems don't exactly work in tandem with each other. I'm kind of want to get your thoughts on the whole situation of the transfer portal, basketball and football.
I'll get mine in, and then smart man in the room can get his. And folks that are watching on YouTube right now, Gregory's gone to chase a couple 10-pound dogs. You know, we talked about this a little bit on Inside Carolina Live on Saturday. There's no – and Mac, this is part of Mac's rant. There's no guidance, you know. Mac said, there they are. I knew it. I knew that that was what it's going to be, folks listening to the podcast. Just imagine a 10-pound dog that barks a lot. They were just on the screen. And they would bite your heels really bad. So – Mac mentioned the team had 90 players in the portal. I mean, that might be some exaggeration, but that is insane. And the question is, where do all these kids go that are in the portal that don't have a landing spot, Greg? And that's not just basketball, that's football. 1,800 plus in the portal in football, 1,300 in basketball. I mean, yeah, it's free agency. And the big guys, the big names can go and improve their lot. But what about the regular guys that for some reason thought that the grass was greener? If this is all about student rights or athlete rights and all that stuff, what happens to those guys?
They lose their way. It's a lot of them will end up at FCS schools, I imagine. But I think this kind of goes back to the whole thing of, because college football has become such a big thing, because the NFL has become such a big thing, and therefore recruiting has become such a big thing. We have a full-time recruiting analyst in Don Callahan for good reason. He's one of the best in the business, if not the best in the business, and it's a full-time job. And fans want to know about every little thing that pertains to recruits. But because of that, all these kids are getting all this attention when they're dominating at their 1A school or their 2A school. as the next big thing, the diamond in the rough, the next five-star. And they hear this just time and time again. And they're so good at the high school level that they don't care what stars they are. They think they're going to get to the next level and they're going to be the man once again. They get there, they meet some adversity, and they don't say, oh, okay, well, you know what? Maybe I wasn't as good as I thought I was. I'm going to tone back my expectations, and I'm just going to work in and do my best and try to get playing time. Nobody says that, especially not an 18, 19-year-old kid. They're still thinking, well, it's just not the right place for me. Like I'm doing everything right, but the coach is, you know, the players, And that's where we get to where we are. And so I really think while there's such an incredible influx right now into the portal in both sports, this is a tough learning situation for the foreseeable future for young kids coming up, because I don't think the portal is going to be this congested in 5 years, because they're going to understand, oh, okay, only 25% of those guys actually went somewhere else. Ooh, that was not a good idea, even though it looked enticing at the time. And I think a lot of these kids that are in this situation, unfortunately, it's not going to end well for them. And hopefully they can find somewhere where they can play. But a lot of them have really hurt themselves by taking this approach. And I don't know really what else to say than that.
So let me clarify some rules just so I'm completely on point. June 1st is the last day to enter the portal this year.
July 1st.
July 1st. So I can push all the way up to July 1st, and then I can enter and be eligible wherever I end up this fall.
In the fall, correct.
First fall camp a month later.
Right. Exactly. And I got
you can transfer whenever you want to transfer. But if you transfer after July 1, it's not set yet, but the plan is if you transfer after July 1, there's going to be some clauses in place that will make you have to sit out a year.
Okay. But everybody gets a one-time – everybody gets one free pass. Is that the rule now? All athletes, basketball and football.
That's where it's going. Yes.
So basically, okay.
In basketball, basketball this year is just a 1 year thing. That's the weird thing about it.
Okay. It's insane. I mean, and the thing is I'm sitting there trying to figure it out, and I'm thinking in the back of my head, the NCAA doesn't know either. I mean, maybe somebody does. I don't know.
Like Max said today, let's say you have 22 kids in 2 weeks from North Carolina say, you know what? We want to transfer. We don't think we're going to play a lot. And 22 kids depart. Well, North Carolina cannot turn around and bring in 22 kids to replace the 22 that just left, because they count the new kids coming in count as initials. Each year you can bring in 25 initials, 85 total. That's the entire amount you can have on the team. Each year it's 25. So if you have 22 to leave, if you've already used up your 25, you can't bring anybody else in.
That's ridiculous.
And the NCAA has not addressed that yet. So there's a lot of little things like that still have to be ironed out. And here we are. I mean, we're making progress. It's a snail's pace as usual with NCAA. But these are some of the concerns. And that's why Max says, yeah, the reason that North Carolina recruits within its tight footprint is because kids that come to UNC, they want to play for Mac, yes. They also want to play in Chapel Hill because their family can come to games. They're close to home. They want to be there. And so you're not going to have a lot of kids transfer. Whatever school he's talking about that maybe had 90 kids in the transfer portal, I mean, I don't doubt that. There's a lot of – I mean, Kansas State's, they had like 50-some transfers on their team a number of years ago. That's how Bill Snyder had so much success for so long. Some of those schools, I mean,
you're going to have high schools when you got like 25 kids on the whole roster and they're all playing both ways.
Max, one of the largest, like Greg said earlier, just like talking nationally about issues and things like that. Like people care what Mac Brown says, and he's been openly frustrated with it and will love to talk about it. Like he's not, when he goes on these rants, he's not just talking about them. Like you can see that he gets worked up sometimes because he's like, I mean, get it figured out, man. Like, because he cares about the kids.
Come on,
like,
man.
Exactly, right? classic.
And he's not just talking to you guys on the Zoom.
No.
He's talking to everybody on that.
He knows they're going to be watched and heard and read. And he's like, come on. Like, these kids deserve better when he's when because when Max says, I've got parents texting me like, hey, like my son's interested and we know you're interested, like what's going on? Max, like, we don't know, like we can't, we don't want to offer your son a scholarship and then not actually be able to deliver when it comes to filling up the rosters. So like, yeah, it's a mess.
A couple housekeeping things before we go forward. Somebody asked a question about the recruit list on the game for Saturday. Don Callahan has got a scoop on the Inside Carolina premium tar pit board, but I will give you a heads up. Ross Martin and Don Callahan are recording a scoop podcast tomorrow. And I'm sure Don will load you up on all your scoop needs and all your football recruiting needs there. So we won't steal any thunder.
And there's a lot of big name guys on that list, Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be loaded in Kenan Stadium. So you really hope for pretty weather and all to work out for Mac Brown to showcase the program. And Don will be on us with us and Joey Powell on Inside Carolina Live on Saturday leading into the game at 3:45, somewhere around there, if you're watching on ACC Network. All right, Gregory Hall, I'm going to give you one free transfer question. You get one free question that you can ask to Luke, myself, or Gregory, or Greg, and I'm putting you on the spot.
Right now?
Yeah. You get a free question.
Okay. On Saturday, who do you want to see outperform expectations?
Luke, go.
I feel like this is just bullying for the younger guys. I'm going to give a lame answer, but maybe it's not lame. We'll see how people interpret it. I would love for Grayson Atkins to just come out and just nail some 50-yarders, left hash, right hash. I think if he can hit all season, because he was good last season. He had some shaky moments. But if he can come out and he's a player, I love some kickers, man. I was a FOGO in high school lacrosse, and I kind of understand the kicker life of kind of being that group that no one really cares about. So I'm going to give Grayson Atkins, show some special teams some love. And if he came out and just nailed like a 60-yarder or something crazy, I think that'd be awesome.
Luke Buxton, the outsider looking in on the kicking team.
I don't see that one happening. Didn't Max say he hadn't missed but one or hadn't missed since the first day of
practice? He said he hasn't missed all spring.
Is that the jinx? Is that the cover jinx? The coach speak jinx? You know, Greg, I'll ask you this question. Is there a position on any sporting team that's less thought of but more important than a kicker?
When Peyton Manning dogs you, I mean, the nicest guy on the planet, right? And he's dogging his kickers. It's such a strange thing because how many games come down to the last minute and come down to an extra point or a field goal to win? I mean, Casey Barth, his legacy is based on a kick against Miami and on Halloween night, 17 years ago?
Wow.
That guy probably hadn't bought a drink in Chapel Hill in 17 years.
Connor Barth, Music City Bowl, Tennessee.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So, I mean, there's tons of those guys.
And then you think about missing Virginia Tech in 6 overtimes, missing kicks. I won't call names.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. It's such a weird thing. And you know, even in practice, I've always got a kick out of that. It's like early on in practice, they'll be working on special teams and the kickers are out there. At least this is under Fedora. This is not a Mac Brown thing. But once they got ready to start with offense and defense, it was basically like, hey, kickers, get off the field. And they would go over to the lacrosse stadium or lacrosse field at Old Navy Fields, and they'd be over there kicking by themselves for the last, like, you know, hour and a half of practice. Such a weird thing for such key figures on the team.
So weird. Yeah, that was – me and lacrosse, when, I don't know if you guys know lacrosse, but face-offs happen after a possession. And they would do the drills and be like, Fogos, get the hell out of here. We'd just be just doing this for the whole rest of the practice. Like, what are we doing? We'd just be cutting up, just having fun. And when I went to the open practice the other day, the kickers were just doing, like, medicine ball abs while everyone else was doing full contact. I was like, this is so strange. These guys are so important. So that's maybe a weird answer, but I'd love for Grayson Atkins to go out and hit some crazy field goals.
Cool. One thing, and I'll steal somebody that Mac Brown mentioned. I want to see Miles Murphy show out. And I know he said he's had a great practice today, but for me, I've said all along, for Carolina to be better than folks even expect this year, it's got to be on the defensive line. So I want to see Miles Murphy, because I think if he can be a monster for Carolina on the defensive line, then I think Mac's got him something in 2021. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think we hear the names Ritzy and Silver, and we know about Vahasek and kind of the big names. But if any of those less known guys, you know, Hester, Varner, Jaleel Taylor, if any of those guys have really popped this spring, and it sounds like Hester has, I mean, then you're just stacking talent on talent. And that's what they need. They need to be able to have defensive line as a strength, because that'll help them out so much in what they want to do, what Jay Maybin wants to do. So yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I feel like we've harped on the offensive line and defensive line for so long, but there's a reason. And the difference in North Carolina competing for the Coastal, winning the Coastal, and actually competing for the ACC, I think it begins and ends with the defensive line. And so if any of those guys that maybe we've overlooked really end up having a really good year, that certainly helps in that regard.
Yeah. Why did Texas A&M end up beating Carolina? Because their defensive line stepped up. Their offensive line did too, but their defensive line stepped up and held Carolina to whatever in the fourth quarter. Same with Notre Dame. I think that's overwhelming, the key. And somebody mentioned a guy like Kyler McMichael. I saw that in the YouTube chat. Those guys benefit greatly from a defensive line. And I say it all the time because I mean it. I mean, that is where it begins and ends for this team to be really good. Let me talk about Johnny T-Shirt right fast. Johnny T-Shirt sponsors. I know folks like to hear me talk about Johnny T-Shirt, because Johnny T-Shirt brings you these podcasts by their sponsorship. And they're also great friends of the Inside Carolina Premium subscribers. They provide all the swag that you could possibly need, and they provide Carolina fans with a place to go to get quality gear and support locally owned and operated. There are plenty of places to get Carolina gear, but there are very few places to get from folks that went to Carolina, put in the work, and built the business at Johnny T-Shirt and johnnyt-shirt.com. Another short break for the audio podcast to pay the national bills. We'll be right back on the beat live.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good,
for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right, boys, we're back. Let's answer some questions.
Well, Greg has to give... Come on now. Greg's turn.
Did you answer, Greg, or did you just riff on mine and not answer?
He riffed on yours.
Okay, Greg, who's got to shine for Carolina in spring game to answer Gregory's question?
I mean, you made me ask. Greg's got to answer. You know, Gee Biggie over here.
You brought the dogs on, so I'll give you a free question.
I'll provide a specific to my rant, my rambling. Hester or Varner, how about that? Two big guys in the middle.
Defensive line. That's where it's at. Greg Barnes. Can't wait to get Greg's thoughts about swapping Conley and Chapman around on defense. Conley, too talented to take off the field. Where does he play? I'm not cool. Wherever he plays. I think Conley's on the field for 80 snaps a game if he has to be. But where's he getting those?
Well, I think it's an interesting conversation, because I think there's two ways you can go with it. Number one, I think clearly the fact that Jay Bateman has a lot of different options up front the defensive line that we've talked about, is going to put him in a situation where Tamon Fox does not have to play the end position anymore. Kamon Rucker is playing a little bit at end, but they're going to be able to use him at outside linebacker, which they didn't last year. And so what that means is they're going to have three big bodies pretty much on the field all the time. And then you can move Tamon Fox and maybe Rucker to outside linebacker. So that gives you a true traditional 3-4 look. And when you do that, you're removing a defensive back from the equation. And as everybody knows, Jacarius Conley was nickelback last year. He packs a punch, very athletic guy. You like what you have at cornerback. You feel like you've got three guys that are NFL caliber, and Michael and Grimes and Storm Duck. And so now you're talking about, okay, well, you've got Conley. If you're going to remove nickelback, where do you put him? And so Don Chapman played some at cornerback last year, did not play any at nickelback. At the scrimmage on Saturday, they worked him specifically at nickelback. They moved Conley back alongside of Trey Morrison. Morrison, if you remember, played nickelback the majority of his career. And due to some injuries and other things, they've had to put him back at safety. He's really more of a utility guy. I don't know that they want him at safety fully. They like to be able to move him around. So now you've got different pieces that you can mix and match. And then you get into the idea, and Matt kind of squashed any idea of any conversation about scheme changes, which I get. That's kind of what he has to do. But all the rage now, defensively, you know, in the middle of the country, is what Matt Campbell's doing at Iowa State. And you know, they've kind of termed his defense, which is really a 3-3-3 with two cornerbacks at man coverage on the edges. But in that 3-3-3, one of those three safeties can come up and do anything and can come up and support and run, can cover a linebacker, can cover the running back out of the backfield. And teams really don't know what to do. It's kind of a different look. You know, it's kind of the whole idea of not only positionless defense, but trying to confuse and trying to take away the advantage of spreading the field both horizontally and vertically. Jay Bateman's a smart guy. No doubt everybody's looking at what Matt Campbell's doing. So you also have that in play. You know, is that something that will transpire in the fall? We'll have to wait and see. We don't know at this point in time. But you've got a lot of different options there. And Jay Bateman, as Max said today, they've got a lot of different schematic options they can do just because they have more bodies and they have more talent. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I think we'll see a lot of new things from Jay Bateman this fall. But the key is to get your best 11 on the field. And if they really think Conley is one of their best 11, you can't keep him at nickelback if you're going to go with the 3-4. It's just, it doesn't work.
So if they're not going to play a nickel, then you have to pull one of the corners. So you've got Duck, McMichael, and Grimes. I would think Grimes is not coming off the field. So that leaves who on the other side? Is Trey Morrison playing another safety if Conley's back there? I mean, where's this depth chart for the defensive backfield? You know, injuries will sort it all out eventually. It usually does. But going in with a clean slate, what's the depth chart back there, Greg?
I don't know that they know, to be honest with you. Certainly we don't know. But Trey Morrison is a veteran. He's a leader back there. He's played in a ton of games. They really like what Don Chapman brings to the table. They feel like he can play three different positions. And then, you know, Conley is what he is. I mean, I think Conley has the potential to be an enforcer back there. Don't want to go so far as to say Cam Chancellor, but I mean, the way that he laid some hits last year, that's who comes to mind, right? Legion of Boom kind of thing. And to have somebody like that on the back end with those cornerbacks, that'll go a long way. And so I really think it's going to be a matter of who pops for them both this spring and in training camp. But that's why they're playing all these guys at different positions right now. Because if you can mix and match how you need to, you can really get creative. Like, you don't have to mess with the cornerbacks because they're set. But you can do a lot of different looks. I mean, you may see Jeremiah Gimmel as the only linebacker out there. And you may have those three safeties up. And Conley may be able to come up and play a little bit of a hybrid linebacker role. There's a lot of different things that you can do, and Jay Bateman does a lot of creative things. I'm sure we'll see some unique sets for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about positionless basketball. I think you'll see a lot of that from Jay Bateman. I mean, unfortunately, this day and age, you got to keep guys happy. But they're at a situation where they don't have to play guys 60 or 70. I think Mac specifically mentioned Ray Vahasek playing 70 snaps in the past, maybe get him down to 40. You know, you can do that across the board with everybody on the defense, and then you can keep guys happy. I'll be interested to see who starts between Duck, Grimes, McMichael, Conley, Morrison. Who else? Cam Kelly.
Cam Kelly, maybe
Don Chapman.
Don Chapman. I mean, that's just – those guys have all
– I mean, you can make a case, like Greg said, with Jay Bateman getting crazy to where you've got McMichael, Grimes, Morrison, Conley, like all of those guys on the field, like Gimel, the only linebacker. You just go through it. They could all – you could have six or seven DBs on there. So not going to have like seven.
Four,
but you could have six.
4-1-6.
I don't even know if you could put a formation – to that, it would just be the six DBs and then your big bodies on the front. And Tommy, you mentioned Ray Vahasek. Something that stood out to me today, Matt called Vahasek small. Ray Vahasek is a big boy, but you can call him small because you've got Hester, Bingley Jones, Silver, Ritzy, like guys that make Vahasek look small. Like 2 years ago or last year, Vahasek's like the biggest guy they got out there. I just wanted, that was a little off the side, but when you brought up Vahasek and Vahasek being called small, I mean, I don't have the roster in front of me, but I'll pull up his.
It's just fascinating to see the transformation in just 2 years. I mean, and you got a guy like Rucker, Luke, who is little, comparatively speaking, but the dude makes plays. I mean,
Vahasek is 6'3", 300.
And he's little.
And he's little. Well. Nobody. To Mac Brown.
Yeah. Well, that's a football coach.
What?
But yeah, I mean, we talked about it before, and I heard folks reference it on other shows. I mean, 10 guys over 285 or whatever, but they've got playmakers, Luke. And I think Rucker can be one of those guys. I always thought, to be honest with you, immediately when I first noticed him, I said, what's Javonte doing on defense? Same number and all. So that's my oldness kicking in. But I think they've got playmakers all over the field. We talked about line. We talked about that. But Rucker off the edge, I think, gives Mac and Jay Bateman a ton of options too.
Yeah, I mean, Rucker, I'd love to see the comparison between him and Javonte in terms of size. He looks like he could be a running back out there. He's a little bigger. He's probably 260 compared to maybe a running back who's around like maybe 220 at its high end, but he is athletic, which I think I love about Rucker. And I think what Mac Brown loves about Rucker, especially in the Bateman scheme, like they just need guys who can get on the edge and rush the quarterback and also, you know, then stop the run, get back in coverage if needed. So I think what this UNC team is really prized on is just having athletes on defense. Even if you look up front, Dez Evans is an athlete. He can stop the run. He can rush the passer. Tamon Fox, Hop, Collins, Hester. These aren't just big dudes who are able to, you know, get some momentum on the line. These dudes can do a lot of different things. They're versatile. And then personally, I love the backfield. I think I'm a fan of the nickel. I think they should go five DBs. You just have so much depth back there and so much talent. And then a coach like Dre Bly, and Bateman coaching corners and safeties. I think this position group is going to be fun to watch. So if you can get enough push in the trenches and they finally have the size to do so, and then you can have some athletes who can rush on the edge and then five dudes back in coverage who are locked down corners and safeties, this defense is going to be exciting. You got them. Then you have 3 years of Bateman, 3 years of his scheme, no brain drain. I think we're going to see some really fun things happen on the defense side of the ball this year.
Yeah, Tommy, we talk about every down backs, and I really think that we should start thinking about that defensively as well, especially on up front, but really across the board. When we talk about Conley and what he can do and Chapman playing three different positions, But one thing Max said earlier, when you're talking about pass rushers, that kind of stood out to me is he mentioned, you know, Clyde Pender is a guy that is a good pass rusher. And so on obvious passing downs, you know, he may work himself into some playing time. I think that's important because we know there's a lot of talent in these underclassmen groups of kids. We also know there's a lot of inexperience and there's a lot of rawness. There's no question that Keyshawn Silver and Javari Ritzy 3 years from now have the potential to be, you know, first team all ACC guys. The potential is there. Is it there now? We'll have to wait and see how they develop. What we know though is that they're incredibly talented, and there's probably certain things that they do really well. And so let's just say, for example, that Ritzy is really able to get pressure on obvious passing downs from the end position. Well, maybe he's not an every down lineman, but maybe you can throw him in there alongside a Pender on third and, you know, 12. And now you've got something effective. And the same goes with, you know, Tamon Fox, I think, is probably an every down guy. Maybe Rucker's not quite there yet, but if they think they can turn him loose on the edge, I mean, he's lining up at the nine technique, which, you know, if you go back to the Lawrence Taylor days, I mean, that's way outside of the tackle. And that's like where the tight end, outside of the tight end would be. So that's basically lining up far from that tackle and just making a beeline for the quarterback and hoping nobody chips you. And so those are unique things that these guys are doing. So you may not see the same 11 guys on the field all the time. It may be very situational. And because they actually have depth now, you can do that. And you talk about the cornerbacks. If you're playing against a team that is air raid and they play with four wide receivers, maybe you'll have all three cornerbacks on the field. And one of the cornerbacks is playing that slot inside guy. And so that's why you train, you cross train, and you try to build that versatility. So you have all these different options that you can do.
And
yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to see the options. Go ahead, Gregory. I'm sorry.
Everything Greg just said is exactly why Mac talked about literally cutting Vahasik's snaps in half, because they're not worried about a fall off. And cutting his snaps in half is not because Vahasik isn't the best out there. He's still their guy in the interior. But if you can only play him for 40, 45 snaps, he's going to be fresh on every snap. So like, that's where it's, you can go from 70 to 45 and be okay, because Vahasik's still going to be an issue. And obviously he's interior and he's not going to set up in the nine and stuff like that. But you don't need guys like that every single, you don't need every down backs like we talk about on, I mean, I know Greg just said that we should talk about that as far as defense, but like, you don't need that when it comes to your D line, especially with these big bodies that you get tired and things like that. I just want to say that. And then I had a question for y'all, what you guys think about Tony Grimes and if he is capable, or you think he's at the point of his, I guess, career, where he's on the opponent's best receiver for like the entire game, and then the rest can kind of fluctuate or around schemes and things like that offensively, or is he going to stay boundary corner wherever he's playing? Do you think it's going to be something like that? Cause like you see in the NFL, defense's best corner is on the offense's best receiver. Do you think a guy like Grimes is there yet, or Bateman will even do that? Somebody mentioned that Grimes is going to be the best player out there. And it's just kind of something that popped into my head about what you guys thought about that.
So let's talk about in relation to Dre Bly. And Dre will say he had 13 interceptions his freshman year. He had 11, if you count NCAA stats. The bowl games didn't count back then. But he also had Robert Williams on the other side that had 20-some pass breakups. But even though Dre was that good and Robert Williams was that good, Dre's numbers dropped the next year, because teams learned how to – they had tape, and they learned to be able to exploit it a little bit. Now, he was still really good, but he didn't have – he wasn't 13 interceptions good. Tony Grimes had – where do you start finally? Wake Forest game, midseason, he really came on. What I'm looking for from Grimes, and Greg can expound on this or take a totally different approach, is how good is he now that teams have tape on how he plays? Does he get better? Sure, he gets better, but other teams also adjust. It's not a zero sum game. And so how will Mac use him? I think Grimes needs to prove that he's that guy that can follow the best receiver all over. But if we're talking about three solid corners, whether it's Duck or McMichael or Grimes, I don't know if there's a need to run your best corner over to the best receiver all the time. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, that's really more of an NFL styling. I mean, you do have unique situations in college, but typically college coaches, and Bateman does this most of the time, is you have your boundary corner and your field corner. And that stays pretty true. And that's just kind of what you want to do defensively with your sets, that those guys understand those positions. Can they switch sides? Of course they can. But you're kind of set up more in that package. The other aspect too, and Gregory, I'll put you on the spot. Aaron Crawford was the highest rated defensive player on North Carolina's team in 2019, according to Pro Football Focus. Who was number two?
I've got a Tommy Ashley type memory over here, old man memory. I'm not even gonna try to guess.
Storm Duck.
Oh, I could have gotten that right.
He only played two games last year, but had higher grades than anybody else. I say that because Tony Grimes, I think, has a ways to go. Is he got a ton of potential? Yes. Can he be great? Yes. But I think he's got some more developing to do. I think there's a little bit of too high of expectation put on him right now. Allow him to grow into his role. I mean, this is still a young kid. I mean, he was supposed to be in high school last year. So this is like his true freshman year this year. Give him a little bit of time to come along. McMichael didn't play a lot at Clemson. Last year was really his first year, and he was kind of the key guy they leaned on. Storm's coming off injury. So I think the fact that you probably have three guys who are all pretty even and they're all really good kind of gets you away from the idea and saying, well, this guy clearly is our best corner. We have to put him on their best guy. I think, you know, unless somebody really emerges, which we haven't heard anything to suggest somebody has, Bateman's going to be comfortable in rotating these guys and really allowing them to kind of get comfortable in their specific roles without trying to match. As I said, sometimes that's going to happen for sure. Sure. But I don't think that's going to be a consistent thing throughout the games.
Since you brought up PFF, can I quiz you? Who was the second worst PFF defender on UNC last year?
Chaz Surratt.
I had Chaz, right? Yeah.
And the guy below him played like two games. Like, his PFF stats last year are just abominable. Like, it's kind of
funny. That's what I've always, like, everybody says, well, look, Javonte is the number one rated running back in the nation on PFF. Do we really think Chaz Surratt was the worst
defender on Carolina last year?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a weird stats. Let me say something as far as snap counts. And Greg, I know this is something that you and I talked about a lot in the years past. For the longest times, Larry Fedora and then Mac's first year, you had to – was Aaron Crawford at 60% better than whoever backup at 100? And that's the debate they had to make. And Aaron Crawford and who was with him down?
Strowbridge. Jason
Strowbridge. They played like twice as much as Clemson's guys did, or more. Maybe even two and a half times as many snaps. Now Bateman doesn't have to worry about that as much, or at least it seems that way. And that's what I want to see from the spring game and then going into the season is my starter, whoever that may be, is his 85% better than his backup's 100%? I think that line has gotten a lot thinner. And if they can get these guys at 50 snaps a game maxed out, situationally applies, then I think you got something on defensive line, because Clemson's dudes, their best dudes, all these dudes that got drafted for the defensive line, they played a third of what Carolina's comparative guys did in their careers. And it matters, but it also matters because they were good and they had backups. And I think that's where Carolina's getting. Let me flip to the offensive side of the ball. You know, we got to talk about backup quarterback. Greg.
Let's talk about Sam Howell.
You're going to see a lot of backups on Saturday, Tommy.
Okay, yeah, let's go with Sam first. And, Greg, let me ask you, we heard what Longo said he needed to work on. what have you seen from him this spring and y'all's ability to watch those open practices that he has worked on what Longo discussed whenever that was pre-spring?
Well, we haven't really seen them in the kind of live contact situation where you can really judge his ability to move around better in the pocket, get rid of the ball faster, those kind of things. Just because, yes, they're putting pressure on the quarterbacks, but it's two-hand touch. So it's a completely different element there. They know that they're not going to get rocked. So I don't know that we'll see that really until the fall. I think the main thing with him is really developing as a senior. I think it was telling that Mac Brown said today that he had Jeremiah Gilmore and Sam Howell talk to the team after practice. That speaks volumes about where the coaching staff kind of holds those guys in regard. And I think that senior leadership is very important, especially with the young guys. But just the scrimmages that we've watched, I mean, it's a beneficial thing for the defensive backs because Howell does not miss. And, you know, all quarterbacks miss some. His misses are so tight. I mean, I haven't seen anybody pick him off. And there's been a few pass breakups. Kid's good. And he's so good that it's easy for us to overlook him and really focus on other competition battles. But he just continues to get better. He has that internal drive. And, you know, I think Mac Brown and this entire staff, they're giddy with excitement about what can be this year. But all of that starts knowing what they have at quarterback.
Mac specifically said, look at all the pro teams, great quarterbacks. The college playoff teams, great quarterbacks. I mean, it starts and ends there. And that is what's ridiculous. And I'll say this and I'll get out of the way for Greg and Gregory and Luke. We don't talk about Sam Howell, and the dude's probably the greatest quarterback ever played at Carolina. We don't even have to talk about him on this show. That is bizarre, having covered Carolina football and been a Carolina football observer for many, many years. Luke, what you got?
Well, Sam, I think along the same vein of we don't talk about him, it's the same thing with, like, players don't have to think about it. When you're going to schools and you're going through recruiting pitches and you're on the team, having that kind of staple comfort zone at quarterback is so important. And the conversations that I've had with the guys, to have like an anxiety and stressful situation to make if your quarterback's going to go up there and you have no idea how they're going to perform, it causes a lot of downline effects on the team. So having someone who has leadership capabilities and has a skill level to go up there and, you know, do well, it's so reassuring for not only us fans and us and coaches, but also just players themselves. Did you guys see that tweet that Sam Howell put out that went viral about Dan making Katz?
Making fun of Big Cat?
Big Cat from Barstool. Tommy, yeah. Greg, you guys see
that? Yeah, so
Greg doesn't even know who Big Cat is.
I don't know. I guess.
Greg Tiger is Woods? Getting Twitter.
G Biggie is not on Twitter. So.
Tiger Woods is Big Cat to me, right?
Equally yeah. Competing podcast in terms of views, us and part of my take. Right. I'm just kidding. But someone put out, I love Sam Howell, but .. Wait, to which Sam Howell responded, and Big Cat's he's big boned. Responded, I love Big Cat, but .. Wait. I was like, that is my quarterback. Like passing yards, touchdowns. That's my quarterback. So
to give you some perspective, Barstool Big Cat has 1.2 million followers on Twitter, and he's just having having discourse with Sam Howell.
Like, just a few more than
big deal. Most of
them. Just yeah. A few. Just,
I mean, Howell is a generational talent, and the thing is he doesn't look it, but he does it, and it's pretty interesting to see. But Greg, and I started to go to the backup quarterbacks. Do Drake May and Jacoby Criswell? Is there pressure on them to try to be better than maybe they're ready for, or try to be as good as Sam Howell? I mean, what is that dynamic with these guys? Because Sam Howell's gone after this year, barring something we don't know about. How much pressure is it on these guys to be that guy?
Well, I think it's important. And I know I had a friend who's a big Carolina fan the other day say, did Mack Brown really say that they expect Sam Howell to leave next year? Not surprised that Sam would go, but that Mack would openly talk about it. And if you think about it, it's genius, because he's saying, we understand the reality of the situation. We understand that Sam's probably going to be a top five pick next year. And so this next year is a competition for the starting job in 2022. And I think that's how Criswell and Drake May really need to be looking at it. Yes, Criswell did not have a spring practice last year, which hurt him a little bit. Drake May is completely new. And so Criswell certainly is ahead of May. And, you know, to my untrained eyes watching scrimmages, I mean, I think clearly Criswell's ahead of May right now. May has plenty of talent, big arm, good athlete, those kind of things. So it's just a matter of him kind of getting used to what he's supposed to do. The hope this spring was for Drake to really just kind of learn the offense. And then really, as they get into training camp, that's when the competition, I think, really kind of ticks up. And even if Criswell is the backup officially in the first couple weeks of the season, I think they're going to give Drake plenty of time, because they understand as well that Sam's likely gone, and that they've really got to make sure both of these guys are ready, because spring practice next year, I mean, that is going to be the competition that we all talk about. We haven't talked a lot about quarterback this spring for obvious reasons. Next year is all we're going to be talking about. Who takes the reins from Sam Howell? And so I think it's – I don't know that it's pressure, but I think the clock's ticking. Like, they need to get this done quickly, and there's not a lot of time. They're going to have playing time a little bit this spring – this fall. I think Carolina will win some of these games big enough that they'll get some reps late. But this is their proving ground, and this is their opportunity to separate, like Mack Brown talked about.
Luke, I'll let you start the process of closing this one out. I mean, I think the spring game is going to be very enlightening for not only folks watching from the stands, but guys playing in the game itself.
Yeah, I'm just excited. I remember I got here freshman year. It's like spring game happened, and we were just, I think, sitting up in a tree talking and drinking lemonade. So I'm like, we didn't even care about the spring game. It was just some afterthought. And now all my buddies are like, can you give me tickets? And I'm like, man, I'm an intern. I can't you get you tickets? Like, I got no power here. But now everyone's trying to go. So I think just the excitement around Carolina football, like, we are back as a university to finally having excitement around a program in which no one could give, you know, a single care about back in 2017. So let alone what happens, how well they do. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, parts they need to figure out. But just the fact that it's sold out in, what, less than 2 hours, that's what you need for recruitment, for the players, to build momentum into a season. And it definitely is a different vibe in Carolina, in Chapel Hill, about Carolina football.
Gregory, you up?
Yeah. Mac's thing today, when asked about what he wanted to see on the spring game that he hasn't seen in the previous spring practices, was clarity at his skill positions at running back and wide receiver, because he doesn't know who's going to be the guy. I mean, Ty Chandler has been impressive, but the other running backs have been up there. The only receiver that's kind of separated himself as kind of the guy is Josh Downs, whereas the other six or seven all make plays but haven't really gotten into that upper echelon of, like, hey, put me out there every down. So he's been challenging them for a while. And so I'm excited to see that, about who steps up. And Mac even said, look, some of these guys haven't played in a long time. Like, you got some of the early enrollees, they haven't played a game, didn't have a high school season coming in the spring. And they're going to be in a spring game, granted, against their own teams, own players. But there's going to be 10,000 people in the stands. I mean, hopefully weather holds up so there actually are 10,000 people in the stands. But, I mean, how many of these guys have ever played in front of 10,000 people, you know? So I'm just excited to see what young guys stand out, if there actually can be some separation at those skill positions. Because last year, as we all know, we weren't worried about the skill positions. This year, it's like, who can be those consistent, not just the big plays, because we know Josh Downs can make a big play. We know Antoine Green, Emory Simmons, we've seen them make big catches, but can they be consistent? And with Bo Corrales and Trophy Brown not really being a factor, now's the time, right? Because come summer, those guys are going to be in there and are might be immediately inserted into some of these guys' spot that they've had all spring. We'll make it on Saturday. So when those guys return, that now it's kind of a question of like, instead of slotting them in front, they're slotting you right back in next to you, and the competition can get going even more come August. So that's what I'm excited to see, is which receivers step up.
Greg, you agree with that to close us out?
I do.
Keep it short and sweet. See, that's how you keep it short.
I didn't get an eye roll. I didn't get an eye roll that time.
Yeah, good job, Mo. All good points. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy how there's a position we always look at every year, and running back and wide receivers on offense this year. Quarterbacks will be next year. Defense is going to be loaded, I think, from here on. I'd like to see everybody stay healthy. I'd like to see the fans that got tickets come to the game and support the team. And something for the listeners of this podcast and the watchers and all, Buck Sanders, Jason Staples, and myself will do a day after podcast on Sunday morning, just like normal. Get our spring game reps in, getting ready for the off season. That'll do us for On the Beat Live. I've been your host, Tommy Ashley, Greg Barnes, Luke Buxton, and Gregory Hall, Man in the Wheels, Johnny T-shirt is our sponsor. Support them, rate us, review us, subscribe. As always, we'll talk soon. Greg will have a ton of content up, and Luke and Gregory will do the same. Be good, be safe. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Everyone is talking about If.
I'm going to go to limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
If. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.